The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
It's a show I love to do every single week because, first of all, I learn so much, and then I get to do it with a very good friend of mine, Michael Coleman, from the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. He joins us every single week here for Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. Of course, the show is also followed up by another show we do for the Heart of Alabama Food Bank called Bite by Bite. We'll be doing that here in just a few minutes. You can hear both those shows right here on the TKR Network, which, of course, we play at least 5 days a week and wherever you get your favorite podcast, and right here on the Tony Curry YouTube channel. Michael, what's going on, bro? Brother, how are you? You're all dressed up today. Is it chilly outside?
It's unseasonably cool here in South Alabama.
Finally.
And it looks like I'm dressed up, but I'm really not. I'm still pretty casual all over. But I'm not a fan of the cold weather. But
you're not a fan of the cold weather, really?
And especially with the time fixing to change, good gracious.
When you were in the military, did you not have to deal with some cold weather once in a while?
Oh, brother, I've slept many a night in Germany.
Yeah.
Out in the woods, and the coldest I've ever been was sleeping up underneath a tree. I had to move the snow out of the way, get in my sleeping bag, and the only hole was just where my mouth was exposed.
Mm.
And the rest of it. And it was about, I woke up that morning, it was about 5 degrees outside.
Wow.
I mean, it was brutal.
Life is good. I did a little research today. We got some emails, info@tonycurryradio.net. We'll always read those. We'll get to those first. But I saw something on NBC Business News. People with poor speech etiquette always use the 7 rude phrases, say public speaking experts. And I mean, it would talk about clickbait, and I clicked on it, and every one of them was like, oh, wow, I know a lot of people that use those phrases. And I wanted to kind of get into, in the workplace, how important word power is and the proper etiquette and what we think of people that do that. And there's one word on here that I use quite a bit. I don't know what that says about me, but we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But let's get into some emails here. Ron wants to know, can and do you ever use non-for-profits invest their money in the stock market? And what are the rules in doing that? If you have money, I know a lot of businesses are in the stock market, but how does that work for non-for-profits?
Yeah, so there's no rules. You can take money. So we had a large gift that was given a few years ago. And so the question was, if we didn't have those expenses, what do we do? And so we're just like any other entity. If you have money set aside, you want to invest that money. And of course, some people say, well, the stock market's risky and interest rates are high. But you talk about what's the best at any state of the economy or any given year, what's the best investment? But with it being donated money, of course, we tend to lean more conservative in our investments. But yeah, absolutely. So we created an endowment fund mm-hmm. here, and it is invested in the stock market and in bonds. And and so the money that grows out of that, of course, all the money that come in is tax deductible. I mean, not tax deductible, it's non-taxable as long as it stays within the nonprofit realm. So yeah, and I actually think it has to do with stewardship. When somebody, if you have excess, like if you have a rainy day fund, my question is, anything, if you have any pot of money, even if it could sit in an interest bearing account earning 1%, it's just better to do that than have it sitting in a regular checking account and not gaining any interest.
Sure.
Put your money to work. The question always comes down to risk. How much risk are you willing to take? And with donor money, I'm not willing to take a lot of risk, even though I think it's probably more advantageous to do it. The fact that it's not my money, it was given to us to do a certain purpose. The last thing we want to do is lose that or risk that to the level that we would come out in the negative on that.
Are there any other way
to do it should be invested.
Yes. Yeah. Are there any other tax breaks that come from money that's given to a non-for-profit if it's lost in the market, or is it just standard like it is on a tax thing?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that we are promoting right now, and we've had some donors take advantage of it. lots of times when you, and please, if you're out there listening, I am not an expert in this, but here's what I do know, that it can be when you take money out of the stock market, out of your investment, lots of times you have to pay a capital gains tax. And I don't know exactly what the rates are. I think they're 20%, 20, 25%. Well, if you take that money and you donate that money to a nonprofit, then you don't have to pay capital gains tax.
Gotcha.
So if it were me and I was a donor and I was going to, and this is typically for your larger donors, if I was going to donate $10,000, I could write you a check for $10,000, or I could transfer stock into your account. And what we have is we already have an investment company, doesn't charge us for this. As a matter of fact, the same one that's doing our endowment, they've set up an account so anybody can transfer stock to them. And once it comes into their account, then they liquidate it and send us the check.
Gotcha.
And then that person gets the tax write-off. Plus, you don't have to pay capital gains on that stock.
There you go. That's pretty good.
So, yeah. So it's advantageous if you, and I would always just, I always want to say, please consult a tax attorney or CPA for the right advice as to what's right for each individual person.
Okay. Nina in West End said, I recently started a family business with my husband of 6 years. Please talk about the pros and cons of doing business with family members. She's saying, I'm seeing a side of him I never knew. I'm not sure exactly what that means. But obviously
it sounds negative.
It does. But there's a lot of businesses, a lot of family businesses. Normally it is a father or mother that starts a business. They hand the business down to their children, as they retire, or perhaps they pass away. But when you're starting a business with a family member, what are the pros and cons of doing that?
Well, I will tell you, there's a lot more cons than there are pros, and I know whereof I speak. So let me kind of tackle it this way. My sister, who is a licensed counselor now, came and worked for me at another nonprofit. And so sometimes you can be, it's too hard or too soft on a family member, depending on what the relationship is. But you can also, because you have this familial relationship, and the ups and downs of any sort of relationship, that can bleed over into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though she's exceptionally gifted and talented, it wasn't best that we worked together. Because you have to remember, anything that I did, other employees were looking and may not have the full picture, but were drawing conclusions. So if she said something to me that she gets away with, because that's something a sister can get away with, they would say, oh, look, he doesn't discipline family. So in other words, you run the risk of having two different standards. And so that can create resentment among other employees. And I understand that. But we have a boutique that's an online boutique, and I have somebody else running that for me now. But when we started it, my wife and my daughter were running it. And one of the things the good side of that was my daughter was committed and worked extra hard, and I felt comfortable calling her day or night. If she was at home at 9 o'clock, hey, you need to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And she would respond well. The downside to it is when you have layers, if it's a husband and wife, you're kind of working towards the same goal. You and your spouse typically have the same goal. You want to grow the business to a certain level. You're both willing to work it, put into it. Sell it for your retirement or save money, but obviously it'd be successful. Well, when you have layers, so you have children, grandchildren, or you have son-in-laws, nieces, nephews, all that, they have their own goals. And it's not necessarily success of a family business is their first commitment. So you'll have people that you think should have the same, be willing to pull the wagon the same, but it doesn't necessarily mean they will. And so what ends up happening is, just like I talked about before, if some of that exposes itself and you think a family member should be doing more for you,
yeah,
or should be trying harder, then you can have some resentment that carries over to the Thanksgiving meals and the Christmas meals. Or the employee family member should think, Well, I am working these extra hours and they're paying me like a regular employee. They're not paying me like somebody that appreciates. So you got resentment coming both ways. Now, can it work out? Obviously, people leave family businesses. They train their children on the business. I've seen it where you'll have four or five kids and only one child wants to carry on the family business. And they work there until the parents either sell out or retire and give it to them. And so it just becomes a generational family business. And so it's doable, but there's so many variables, personality-wise, what your goals are, goals and aspirations, what your level of risk is. Lots of times the older people have control and they're still running a business like it's 1970. And the next generation says, oh, well, there's a thing called social media. Maybe we should advertise or stay connected. And they're like, a website? What do we need a website for? I never had a website before. So you get those battles. And again, when you're the boss and you say, no, we are yes or no, we're going to do something. You draw a line in the sand. It's different when it's your child and you're drawing a line in the sand because that doesn't go away. I mean, the employee can go home and say, my boss is a jerk. When your child is going home and you've drawn a line with them, it's just a whole different dynamic that you have to expect. So I will say this about the dynamic that she's talking about where husband and wife. So what you're seeing is people probably being put under a lot of scrutiny, under pressure. Like my wife doesn't know what I do on a daily basis. She just knows what I tell her.
Yeah.
She doesn't know how hard I've worked, how hard I haven't worked, or the choices I've made, or maybe been good, or maybe been bad. When you're a spouse and you're with each other all the time, first of all, that can be very taxing. But second of all, if things are not going swimmingly, then you start looking at the decisions that were made, and if they've been bad decisions or have created more financial risk or then resentment can seep in. And so it's just a tough thing. Can it work? Yes. But you've got to have the right situation. So the best I can offer her is do not go any longer. If you're frustrated about something, you need to, not when it's happening, but you need to sit down and have honest, open conversations both ways. And you need to listen actively and let him say things that you might be doing. But really pursue understanding and try to come to an agreement.
Where I see, and I'll use the word friction, is when you have maybe both parents work, maybe one works and the other doesn't, the man or the wife, and they've got a full-time gig already. The other person decides to go out and start their own business. You obviously want to support your spouse and you're like, that's great. Let me know how I can help. And next thing you know, you're having to change your life. You're already working 50, 60 hours a week. And all of a sudden your husband or your wife wants to go out and start this new business and you want to be supportive and you do see the opportunity perhaps for it to make some money or at least to keep them busy. Maybe the kids are flying the coop and maybe it's a little later on in life and they haven't worked in a long time. And then you want to help them with that project. And next thing you know, it turns into another full-time gig.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. And again, there's so many different variables with that. I mean, the husband may tell the wife, oh, yeah, start your business. I'm fully supportive. And the next thing you know, he's looking and you got a $20,000 credit card bill. And he's like, where did this come from? And it starts affecting your whole, you know. So he's working not only to put food on the table, but now no savings are going in because he's trying to constantly, he's just bailing water on that big bucket of fire over there that you've created. Again, not necessarily, you know, when we're in new spaces, and I'll be the first to say this, whenever I'm in a new space, I move forward boldly, but to do so means you go in knowing you're going to make lots of mistakes. And I've made mistakes in the boutique, I've made in the nonprofit world lots. And so some don't turn out to be so bad, but some of them can be a real dumpster fire. And if you've not brought that partner along, or if your partner sees that differently, it can put a strain on a marriage to the point that it can bring a marriage down. That's how severe it can get.
All right. Emily says, I have a small computer business with 5 employees. I don't have healthcare or any type of retirement plans to offer my employees, but I'd like to someday. In the meantime, what is something I can offer to keep my employees happy?
Oh, great question. So you could just do a Google search and you're going to have a ton of things that pop up. But some of the things off the top of my head is more flexibility, like more time off, more paid time off, maybe some vacation hours. And the best way, though, that I have found is sit down with your employees and say, look, I want to pay you more. I want to give you benefits. That's a goal of mine. The business has to grow substantially before that can happen. But I don't want to lose you. I want to project you. So first of all, you're telling them they are a valuable employee. You're taking time to look them in the eye and say, you matter to me. That alone, letting them know that oftentimes can cover up a lot of dissatisfaction, if you will, maybe with their pay scale or their benefits. But find out what's important to them. And everything doesn't cost a lot of money. I will tell you some of the most meaningful things that's been done for me and that I've done for others have been sitting down and writing a personal note. One of the things I used to do was I used to find out what's somebody's favorite treat. And if they said a king-size Snicker bar, then when I would go out, I would get them, if they had done something that I thought was good, or they, you know, they just showed up to work every day and they were motivated, I'd buy them a king-size Snicker bar and I'd put a little sticky note on it that goes, you know, this is something small that is a thank you for the big impact you're making.
Yeah.
Or the difference, you're a difference maker. Something to boost them. And again, small little bit of time, small expense, but those constant pats on the back. I mean, it needs to go outside of just the verbal, because after a while it's like, yeah, I get it. You value it. But those little kind of things, and talk to people. Somebody may say, well, I don't even want a raise. What I prefer is more time off.
Yeah.
Or I prefer this, or I prefer that. And so talk to them and say, what's important to you? If somebody were to pull you away, what would be the first thing you're looking for? And you might be surprised at some of the things that are important to them. They don't cost a lot of money. You just need to be made aware of. So I'd spend some time on Google and just say, inexpensive ways to reward employees. But again, nothing beats just sitting down and having an honest conversation and just saying, tell me what really matters to you. Forever long you're here, how do I help you to that next level? You know, what are your goals and aspirations? And just try to connect what you can do, what you can bring to the table. And I think you'll see a real morale improvement.
There he is. He is Michael Coleman. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. This is Mission Minded. We do it every single week. It runs 5 times a week on the TKR app, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And of course, right here on the Tony Curry Radio YouTube channel. People with poor speech etiquette always use these 7 rude phrases in quotes, say public speaking experts. These are kind of funny. And I know you've seen them. And I just kind of want to go one by one. And then this was on a business website, and I'm thinking about people that use some type of speech etiquette and or lack of word power in the workforce and how that could affect not only their jobs, but their job performances. Number one, do you want to? In other words, do you want to go to lunch as a way of delivering orders? Do you want to take the trash out? It's indirect, fake politeness. It comes across as belittling, as instead of just saying, will you do me a favor type of thing. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I learned this lesson a long time ago. I looked through this list right before we came on.
It's good.
And I tried to say, and again, anytime I'm looking at something, I do try to do an assessment of self. But this is one I learned a long time ago, which is, and people know, if I call somebody in my office as a CEO and I ask, I can ask them or get them to carry out a task in a number of different ways. But it's exactly what I do. I said, hey, man, if it's the custodian, he comes, hey, man, would you do me a favor and grab my trash? I've got some extra trash today. Would you do me a favor and grab some trash? Because it's just such a polite way, because people typically want to please their employer, please other people. So you're feeding into that very naturally. They feel like, oh, of course I will do you a favor, even though they're just doing their job. And some people, I've seen leaders sometimes that are hesitant to do that. Like, they're not doing me a favor. They're doing their job. That's not even the point. The point is you're projecting, you're giving them an easy opening that makes them want to do it. And they feel like they're not just taking out the trash. They're doing you a favor.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to, hey, you want to come take out the trash? I mean, and that's the whole point is with public speakers, oftentimes when you listen to them, they will say things sometimes. And there's some in here that rub me wrong when I read through this. So I totally get what this is about. And I'm always a favor of, will you do me a favor? It's a humbling statement. It's not a statement of I'm better than you or I have an expectation. I'm too good to take out the trash. I'm like, it comes across as I would normally take out my own trash, but I'm really jammed up. Could you do me a favor and take my trash out? And most people are going to want to come right along with that.
We talk about in radio all the time, crutch words. And if we used to have to go through sound checks, we used to have to listen to every show we did. It was one of the worst parts of our jobs because no one wants to listen to their own show, particularly if they know they didn't have a good one. And you would realize that you would use the same crutch words over and over and over again to get you from one action to the next. And this next one, truly authoritative people don't tend to waste time on throat clearing statements. This is something a lot of people would say before they'd say something else. And when they say it too often, and you know what follows is going to be something you don't want to hear. You don't want to hear they say, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And I know somebody that says that all here's the thing. And I'm like, oh no, here it comes. Talk about here's the thing.
Well, I have never had somebody say, well, Michael, here's the thing, and something positive follows that. Mm-hmm. It's never been something that I've wanted to hear.
No.
So you automatically go, you know, your shoulders just kind of sink like, and usually it's usually like a definitive statement. Like, look, here's the thing. I'd like to give you a raise, but here's the thing. We don't have any money. You know, we didn't raise our revenue, whatever. It's not going to be positive. And so what this particular person is recommending is, you know, if you're offering opinion, don't say, here's the thing, because that's projecting. Your mind's already made up. It's not going to happen. And that's fine if that's your intent, but if it's not your intent and that you just have this phrase, then think to looking at it a little differently and keep it a little bit more open, like to say, I think, you know, I think we might have trouble doing the raise, but I won't, but it's not definitive. It's like, I think this is kind of where we are. Money's tight. I'm going to work hard to try to get it for you.
Yeah.
But it's undecided at this point, but it's a little bit, brings maybe a little bit more optimism, a little less defeatism, I guess.
The word right with a question mark in recent years has become normalized to use this. A lot of people say, you know, it's been a really tough season, right? Blah, 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 blah. Seems like a way to perhaps try to find common ground with that person to kind of let them know, hey, listen, this is the way I see it. And that's the way it's going to be. Talk about that word real quick.
This is one of the ones I hate. When I hear public speakers, because I'm a person who spends a lot of time in gray. And when somebody said, and nuance, I should say, mm-hmm. And when somebody makes a bold claim or a bold statement and they say, so-and-so, right? And it's either agree with you wholeheartedly about what you just said, or, you know, it's either I got to take everything you said or reject everything you said. And I want to say, well, you know, I agree with a lot of what you said, but I don't want to just wholeheartedly digest. And I will tell you what they came back with is I'm not even a big fan of that. He said, rather than, you know, demanding this confirmation, like you agree with me, right? And he offered as an alternative in this article, you know, I just can't think of a more critical moment for the team. Can you? I mean, it still feels like it's compelling you to agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, as a CEO, I'm not inviting opinions to the table if that's my goal by saying, look, I think this is the most important. I can't think of a more important issue facing us. Can you? And you might have 10 different opinions around the table, but CEO's already said he thinks this is the most important. So what are you going to do? You're going to fall in line.
Yep.
I think, again, it is failure to hear yourself and understanding the effect of words when you say something like that, like right, where you're demanding compliance. You might have good employees who feel the safety and security to stand up to you and say, well, I get that. I get what you're saying, but here's what I think to differ. Most people are just going to fall right in line. Yeah. That's not healthy.
These are seven rude phrases that people with poor speech etiquette use. I cannot think of a boss that has not used this for next phrase at least once. And it's usually when they've reached their tipping point where they're done. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. And at that point, it's pretty much, you know what to do. You're not doing it. Figure it out. Why is that such a bad thing to say?
Well, I will tell you, it depends, because there are times, I'll tell you, that to me, this is just one man's opinion. Here's where it's appropriate to use. I have had people who don't want to do something. And so there are people who there's always pushback. It doesn't matter. They want to be spoon-fed the solution. They don't want to have to actually rub brain cells together to have to think. And so and if they don't want to do it to start with, then they're naturally going to come. All their power is thinking about what could go wrong or where the problem is. And I'm like, okay, we start with a problem and we're working through it. And everything I say, they go, well, I don't think that's going to work because of this. Well, and so they can push back. Well, guess what? The problem's still there. And then I'm like, okay, well, I've thrown out four or five things. Go figure it out. It's your job to go figure it out. Go figure it out. I don't think that's the point of the article. The article is that I don't want to do that without going through that first exercise. In other words, with people who genuinely want to figure it out. And so I'm like, instead of putting the onus on the shoulders of the employee, go figure it out. Like you got to figure it out. It's like, no, I'm willing to sit down with you and let's figure out what's the best way to tackle this. And so we're investigating, but we're investigating together. So you're inviting them to the table as part of the investigation team. In other words, their opinion matters, and you're not going to force a solution that's going to make them choke. So again, the employee feels valued. The communication is going to be more open because he doesn't feel like what the boss didn't say. He knows how to figure it out. So I'm going to be more free to speak. That's just a better way to do it. But when you get down with the few employees that they're just going to push back on you no matter what. And sometimes you say, well, that's what I'm paying you to do. Go figure it out.
Yeah. When I was doing sports radio, I was working with a guy. And he used this next phrase a lot. And whenever he said it, I knew he had nothing else to say. And I'm like, we're here to speak on the radio. We're here to debate this particular situation, whether this player should be playing or whether he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, whatever it is. And whenever he said, it is what it is, that would tell me that he did not want to talk about it anymore. I'm like, listen, that's what we discussed about talking about today. Talk about that. That drives me crazy. I try to do everything I possibly can without saying it is what it is, because you're basically saying I'm not talking about this anymore.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, basically you have shut down the conversation. You don't want to think about it. You don't want to explore what the root causes are or anything. And it's almost just like you're shutting down your brain. It is what it is. It can't be changed. It can't be affected. And I don't live in that world. And so I'm not somebody that's in favor of that. I can talk something to death as well. I get that. But I like the communication process and keeping all that open.
I've used the word obviously a lot, and that's a crutch word of mine. Obviously, blah blah blah, and it's so redundant, because obviously, if you're saying it, because you're saying obviously, so there's no reason to say it. There's no reason to say obviously, because you're about ready to say it anyway. Obviously, right. It's sunny outside. So obviously is one of those words. And finally, the last one here in quotes: if you want my honest opinion. Or I was just joking. My other favorite one is, if I may be brutally honest, like there's a difference between regular honesty and brutal honesty. You know, if you're going to preface brutally honest, I know it's something I don't want to hear, but talk about that a little bit. When someone says, can I be honest with you for a minute? Or if I have to be honest here, well, I hope you're being honest.
Well, and I would tell you, there's another one in the military that I grew up with for when during my time in the military, they'd say, with all due respect, sir. And what they were fixing to say was something incredibly disrespectful. And I told them, I said, now, look, I'm going to open up the floor. You can tell me whatever you want to tell me behind closed doors. But just so you know, if you say, well, sir, with all due respect, I think you're a grade A prick or whatever, that doesn't get you, that still doesn't mean you're not culpable for what you say and did. In other words, it doesn't wipe out. As long as I preface my comment with that, with all due respect, you're the worst leader I've ever seen in my life. There still might be some consequences from that. But let me just hit on obviously real quick. And I'll close with this. I was at a conference real quick and somebody was talking about and said something that was, we were having a difficult conversation about race, and the person stood up and said, well, obviously this country was founded on racist principles. And a lot of people in the room agreed because it fit. So forget the subject. It's the speaker said, obviously, as if this is settled. There's no conversation about it when you say that. And the other people in the room are like, well, there may be some more nuances. Yeah. Is racism a challenge? Yes. Was there some horrible part of our country? Yes. All of that. I don't know that the principles were necessarily racist. How we carried it out had plenty of racial issues. So when you say, obviously, you're saying what comes next must be the opinion of everybody else, or they're wrong or they're crazy. And that, you can speak that not with words, but just saying that word, because people go, well, I don't agree with that. So obviously you're wrong. So stay away. I agree with the vast majority of what was written about here, that stay away from those because you can have some unintended consequences, negative consequences with your employees.
That's a great article. We'll tag it on the back of our podcast here. And of course, you can hear our podcast on every major industry and watch our show right here on our Tony Curry YouTube channel. Till next week, HAFB.org, Heart of Alabama Food Bank. If you're listening to us on TKR, stay tuned. Bite by Bite's up here next on Tony Curry Radio. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.